Support for Iditapod, a production of Alaska Public Media, comes from MVFCU. Experience the MVFCU way.
One, two, three, four!
Welcome to the Iditapod. It's a podcast about, you know, the Iditarod. Brought to you by Alaska Public Media and KNOM Radio in Nome. I'm your host, Casey Grove. Before we get too carried away here, how about a word from our sponsors?
Support for Iditapod comes from Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, taking pride in its strong ties to Alaska's communities.
As we speak, 52 mushers are on their way out of Willow and on the Iditarod Trail, hopefully heading toward Nome. And I am in the studio here, joined again by Ben Matheson. Hi, Ben.
Hey, Casey.
Ben is reporting for KNOM Radio on the Iditarod again this year. Our reporter Zachariah Hughes from Alaska Public Media is on his way out into the field. And Ben, remind me real quick, where are you headed and when?
I'll be headed to McGrath, about 300 miles up the trail. Mushers should arrive there Tuesday evening.
Great. So the Iditarod had its official start today. The race clock is actually ticking. Those mushers out on the trail, they left out of Willow today. And Quince Mountain was there to see his wife off and start the race. She's a rookie. That's Blair Braverman. And we talked to Quince. Calling Quince Mountain.
Hello.
Hey, Quince.
Hi, Ben. How's it going?
Super.
So super.
Oh, man.
This is Quince Mountain, husband of Blair Braverman, who's a rookie in this year's Iditarod. And Quince is going to be giving us some reporting power from the trail, is following along on a snow machine. And Quince, one thing I wanted to ask you about was just how did things go at the actual start of the race today?
I thought the mood up in Willow was pretty excited, both from the spectators and from the 52 mushers who left the start line today and their handling crews. You know, this is what we've all been preparing for 8 months, and finally those dog teams are leaving the start line. There's no chance to add any equipment, no chance to repack any drop bags or send any different dogs. It is what it is, and for the next nearly 1,000 miles, I mean, everybody's going to have what they have on the trail. And then I think as soon as the mushers depart, there's this kind of just relief or sigh, you know, a kind of collective sigh up in the handler parking area where, you know, all the mushers are off and handlers are chatting with one another and laughing and talking about, you know, how now they're going to go home and they're going to run the puppies or the yearlings that, you know, maybe haven't been in run in a week or two as everybody's been making final preparations for the race. So I think it's just kind of a festive atmosphere for the people around the mushers. But then the mushers themselves are, you know, often just maybe a little worried, maybe making some last minute changes, things that haven't even necessarily been done before. Or, you know, Blair, my wife, was about to jettison this down suit that she got because she decided that, you know, it was too bulky or too heavy. It's not cool enough to need it. And finally, we found a kind of compression bag for it and a way to put it in. But, you know, it's just, you know, I think with a number of the mushers, especially newer to the race, there was some last minute little adjustments, you know, people are thinking about because this is it. This is what they're going to have.
Is it mostly relief that she's out on the trail? Are you worried about her at all? And I guess there must be a component of just pride that you guys made it to the starting line.
Oh, you know, in the past, like, hour and a half, probably 5 or 6 times I've thought, oh, I have to drop this dog, or, you know, is Peppy going to eat fish? And then I realize they're not here. I don't have to think about the dogs, and I love them dearly, but I, you know, it must be like being a parent with toddlers and you go to the airport or something and can get a cup of coffee and you don't have to think about, you know, where are the kids, are they glued to my leg, you know, how can somebody watch them while I just like walk from here to there. And that's how I feel. I'm always aware of what the dogs, you know, need in terms of eating or digestion or getting off the truck or on the, and especially being on a truck with them for a couple weeks as we have been. It's just such a relief to have them just down the trail doing what they love to do. And yeah, so there's that, and then there's the pride in Blair, and then there's the anxiety about you know, our snow machines and upcoming trip. We're going to be leaving tomorrow and hope to kind of catch up with the race pretty quickly. But I think leaving in daylight and, you know, having our gear really prepped and getting some sleep seems prudent.
Yeah, definitely, definitely, definitely. Hey, before I forget, last year, you know, we had heard a report of one dog truck getting into an accident on the way up to Willow. And I think everybody was okay there other than the truck itself. The dogs and the people were okay. Any obstacles like that that you heard about for any of the mushers today?
I didn't hear about any problems with any mushers or teams getting off from the start line today. It seemed like everything went off without a hitch. The weather's pretty warm, so everybody was outside. You know, the community center wasn't quite as full as it has been in years past. There were kids outside on a swing set. You know, the logistics were a little different. The trucks and trailers were not parked out on the lake as normal, and so we were a little worried how crammed together is everybody going to be as they get the teams off. But you know, there's just so many volunteers, and the security there is really good, keeping the human traffic in the dog area to a minimum, to the people that need to be there. So you know, even not being able to leave from the lake and the dogs having to kind of go around the community center and down this icy hill, everything seemed to go pretty smoothly. I did see a Life Flight helicopter land, you know, right at the but I don't think that had to do with any musher team. Hopefully, you know, whoever that was for is going to be on the mend soon.
All right. Well, thank you for that report. I imagine you have a lot of things to get ready before you head out on the trail, and we'll be here keeping the home fires burning for you and looking forward to talking to you later as communication lines will allow.
Okay. Well, thank you. I can't wait to talk to you both on the trail and in the studio. And Ben, I hope you have safe travels.
Likewise. See you down the trail.
All right. Thanks, Quince.
All right. Take care.
You too. Bye. Quince Mountain heading out on a snow machine on the Iditarod. You know, I kind of said my piece yesterday about this, but I'll just say it again. We'll be hearing more from the mushers on the trail about a wide range of experiences that they're having out there, aside from just the competitive part of the Iditarod. But for now, we do kind of want to get into the numbers a little bit and kind of break down the race as we know it. Ben, where do you want to start?
Let's start with number 10.
Number 10. What is the number 10?
We've got 10 rookies this year. So out of the 52, that's basically 1 in 5 mushers. They're doing it for their absolute first time. We had a chance to speak with quite a few at the start, and we've already had our discussion about who are projecting for Rookie of the Year. Zach had a chance to speak with Martin Apayawik-Reitan. He is a young Norwegian musher who's mushing out of Kaktovik these days. And Zach asked him what he's going to listen to on the trail this year.
Oh, are you going to listen to Harry Potter on the this time, like the 440?
Yeah, I might listen to him again. It's been a while, but yeah, I remember I was listening to him when I was driving the snow machine along the trail too. So maybe I'll listen to him again.
Do you have anything planned for your listening while you're out there? Anything loaded on an iPod or something like that?
Yeah, I got an iPod because they, on the musher meeting for the quest, they banned phones. So I had to run out and buy an iPod. Yeah, now I have an iPod, so I might as well use it. So I think I'll switch between my phone and the iPod and charge one while using the other.
So Martin Apayawik-Reitan, listening to different things on the trail, that's something that you kind of have to do. If you're a musher, you got to kind of stay in the zone by listening to music and podcasts and all sorts of things. Maybe there's people out there listening to the Iditapod. Who knows? Ben, you talked to a pretty seasoned musher that was a rookie in the Iditarod last year. Who was that?
I spoke with Matt Hall. He's a musher out of Two Rivers, originally from Eagle, and I asked him about his strategy for having a successful navigation of the first couple days.
You know, there's a couple different ways of going at it. One way is take advantage of having a top bib number 3, and stay out front where the trail's good. You know, once 10 teams, 20 teams, 30 teams, 40 teams go over a trail, it starts getting softer and softer and more and more work for the dogs. However, there's a lot to be said about taking it easy early on in the race, which is always my plan. I usually only run, 40, maybe 50 miles out of the start chute, take a break. It's later on in the race that we start doing our longer 70, 80 mile runs.
I imagine as a rookie, when you have 14 dogs in front of you ready to go off on this race, it might be a really tough thing to keep them slowed down. That's something you hear mushers talking about.
A lot of standing on the brake and on the drag for those first day or two.
The rookies in the Iditarod, that's always a really interesting story to see how people see the trail for the first time. And of course, different rookies sort of bring a different level of experience to the race. They've already had to mush in a lot of races to get here, but how they deal with the Iditarod Trail the first time that they see it is always an interesting topic. Also this year, according to the ADN, we have the highest percentage of women in the race.
We've got 17 women and 35 men running this year. I spoke with Allie Zirkel, who's got about 2 decades of experience in the race now. When you talk with Allie, you really quickly get into topics about your mental state and attitude and how you make that a success on the trail.
Attitude is what makes our world like pulse. I mean, whether you're sitting in the corner watching life go by or whether you're jumping on board ready to, you know, ride the wave 1,000 miles, I think attitude is everything. And so, I mean, people always say that, you know, your dogs pick up on the musher's attitude. Well, turnabout's fair play. The musher picks up on the dog's attitude. So I think that's just as important.
Allie Zirkel, SP Kennels out of Two Rivers. She's had 18 straight finishes in the Iditarod and definitely knows what she's talking about. 52 mushers. I guess that's the smallest field since 1989. And there have been over 90 mushers in this race before. So smaller field. I've heard from different folks. I think we talked to Quince Mountain about this, that it just seems like more of a condensed field. There's a lot of experience in this year's race.
There's 5 past champions. There's, I believe, 9 of last year's top 10. It's as competitive as the Iditarod has ever been.
So fewer mushers and then also fewer dogs. We've had this rule change to go from 16 dogs to 14 dogs max. What did you learn about that talking to folks?
It's really a mixed bag. With 14 dogs, you've got fewer options on which dogs to run, which dogs to take, a little bit more pulling power, a little bit more work when the going is tough and there's just more work and less flying. Other folks believe it's a really positive development for the race. It's going to raise the stakes a little bit on each individual dog by just a little bit. It's going to lead to fewer dogs being dropped, fewer dogs being flown around, fewer hazards of having drop dogs hanging out at checkpoints. And it saves a little bit of money and it saves time. If it's every dog has 4 booties times every single checkpoint, the numbers become astronomical.
All those booties.
I spoke with Nanana musher Aaron Burmeister, and he was torn on the subject.
Do you think it's a positive move for the race to transition from 16 dogs to 14?
You know, in the big picture, yes. It's historically, I love the 16 dogs. I loved 20 dogs when it was 20 dog limit when I first started racing. Do we need that dog power? No. In today's Iditarod, with the nutrition, with the training, with the evolving of the sled dogs and the incredible athletes they are, you really don't need more than 12. I mean, they're incredibly powerful athletes. They're phenomenal. And getting to know them, getting through the different weather conditions. 16 is nice because it gives you an opportunity to throw more young dogs in there to get them experience. 14 is better because it's less dogs, less booties to put on, less food to carry, less to take care of, and you're more focused on them. So for me, everybody kind of fights a change. When a change happens, then after a year or two, they're excited about it. And so it's kind of that mixed emotion, but I'm really happy about it. And 14 is plenty of dog power to get us to know them.
It's just great how you can just in the background there hear the cacophony of dogs barking. That was from the ceremonial start of the Iditarod in Anchorage, to be clear. Who else did you talk to about the dog numbers?
Spoke with defending champion Yorlisef Olsom, spoke with 2017 champion Mitch Seavey, both of whom preferred 16 dogs. They like having the options. They like having the power. They believe that the Iditarod is a special race, and a special race with professional mushers can handle 16 dogs.
And Mitch's take on this is kind of like, we've done this before. We've shown that we can do it, so why not have that extra power?
Well, I think it's something that nobody really knows what it's going to do, but I predict that mushers are going to be more reluctant to return dogs from the trail. I think they're going to want to keep them in the team as long as possible. We already feel like it's a little bit of a short team. I personally would rather see it stay at 16. I think it's a diminished race, and I think it's a little bit more stress and pressure put on fewer dogs. We've shown that we can handle 16 year after year, so that's really not a problem. But we'll see how it all works out. Maybe it'll be revisited later.
5. That's the number of YK Delta mushers that are taking part in this year's race. The YK has a pretty robust dog mushing program with folks racing from Antioch down to Bethel and lots of races within the villages and the Kuskokwim 300. But five is a big number. Usually it's closer to three or so. I spoke with Richie Deal, who trains out of Antioch, about how he prepares for some of the most mountainous sections at the beginning.
Well, it's kind of hard to train for that because especially coming from Western Alaska, where it's a lot of flatland, you don't really see windy trails and you don't see the, you know, mountains and stuff. So, I mean, it's not new to us, but I mean, we know what to expect and we'll deal with it when we get there.
So you get five YK Delta mushers in the race. And then, of course, you attract mushers from different parts of the world. Even we have Mats Pedersen from Sweden. There's Marcel Fresno from Whitehorse, Canada. Ed Hopkins from Canada. Sebastian Dos Santos Borges from France. He's a rookie in this year's race. And then we have some Norwegians again in the race.
Three. There are three Norwegians. We've got defending champion Jorleifseth Olsom. We've got Nicholas Wickstrand, who's been mushing dogs with Pete Kaiser out in Bethel. And then Martin Apajawik Reitan, who's mushing out of Kaktovik, but grew up in Norway. I had to ask Nick Wickstrand about whether he had brought any special Norwegian trail food. They make extremely hearty, battle-tested trail food, and his response was different from what I expected.
I got sent out some burritos that Pete's mom made, and I love Thanksgiving, so a lot of my main meals is stuffing from Thanksgiving food.
Speaking of the Norwegians, at the ceremonial start along the trail, there was this big trailgate party, and they had queued up the Norwegian national anthem for Yor when he went by, and they were chanting, "Four more Yor, four more Yor." Ben, there's a lot of reasons why people enter the Iditarod. Some of them just want to make it to the end, but others, they're in it for the money. How much money are we talking about for the winner this year?
$50,000 is what goes to the winner. That's down from recent years when it's been closer to $75,000. But as the race has lost a few sponsors and lost a few of those major revenue sources, this year it's a smaller race and a smaller purse.
$50,000 in a brand new pickup truck, something you hear from the mushers late in the race when they're leading sometimes is, well, I feel pretty good about my position, but I'm not going to pick out what color truck I want just yet. And those have been very prophetic words in the past. Ben, it's time for a listener question. This one comes to us from Emma Dumoulin, age 7. She's from Monroe, Washington. She actually met Mitch Seavey's dogs in Girdwood this last summer. She also met Iditarod champion Libby Riddle's dog while on a cruise, it turns out. And it sounds like Emma is a huge dog lover. The person that sent this email in on her behalf, I'm guessing it's a family member, says that she's possibly going to be a veterinarian in the future.
The dogs and the mushers spend a lot of time on their trail. How do they get their food?
Thanks, Emma. That's a really good question. The mushers have to pack ahead, and they have to think ahead and send out the food that they want to eat at checkpoints down the trail. A lot of times what they do is pack meals in vacuum packs, and they'll make things that are really rich and hearty with gravy and meat and potatoes and things that keep them warm. And all they have to do is dip that into some hot water to cook it up. And then just as their dogs eat food that's been cooked with hot water, the mushers also dip their food in hot water to eat. A lot of times the community halls and schools and the communities put on a sort of potluck. So if you're lucky, you get some moose stew, you get some beaver stew, you get dry fish, pies. What else, Casey?
The moose is what I think about because the year that I was in Huslia for the Iditarod, I had never seen more moose dishes and different kinds of dishes. I mean, lasagna, spaghetti, moose burgers, they kept bringing it. I thought, like, when is this giant procession of food going to stop? And it was actually just the entire time. They just kept bringing it, never stopped. As much moose as you could ever see in your life.
Thanks, Emma, for the really good question and for making us hungry.
Well, as always, we want to remind the listeners that they can send us questions to iditarod@alaskapublic.org. You can type those out if you want to, and we'll try to answer those questions. You can also record yourself in a voice memo. A lot of smartphones have an app on them that you can open up. Record yourself asking your question. Send that again to iditarod@alaskapublic.org. You might even get on the podcast. Ben, how do you feel about being on the podcast?
I'm feeling really good about being on the podcast.
Yeah, me too. It's been suggested to me by a very loyal listener of the podcast that we share our Twitter handle so people can know where to find us on Twitter. What's yours?
You can find me at Ben Matheson. That's BenMatheson.
And mine is KC Grove. That's at KCGROVE. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Ben Matheson, you are heading out on the trail, sir, and I salute you. I hope you good luck, safe travels, and please keep in touch.
Thanks, Casey. I'll be looking forward to the podcast.
Folks, our theme music is by the band Sassafras. I'm your host, Casey Grove. We are going to have some more I Did a Pod coming at you real soon. Until then, happy trails.
And are you having fun today?
Yeah.
What's your favorite part about all of this?
The doggies.
That's a good answer. What do you like about dogs?
Because they're so soft.
Also a good answer.